Good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us, Brad Sussmat, in studio from Skyview Satellites, Sports360AZ.com, on AZ Central Sports, on White Mountain Radio, and of course on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat. Kent Summers is going to join us from the airport heading to Indianapolis for the NFL Scouting Combine. AZ Central Sports Cardinals insider Kent Summers will be with us here in about 10 minutes on where they're going to go if they had the first pick today in the first round, the 20th pick overall. What direction do they go? Free agency, Carlos Dansby. They look at a quarterback. There's a story today developing that Steve Spurrier said to Jadeveon Clowney's work ethic is not all that great. So we're going to talk to Kent Summers, all things NFL draft here in a few minutes. Of course, we're headed to the NFL Combine. Thanks to our friends at Santan Ford, we'll be at the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. Eric will be heading there tomorrow. We'll have Kyle Dodd with us in about 30 minutes. Kyle, the Arizona State Sun Devil color analyst on the basketball team tonight, ASU back out. It's a big game for them. Look, you beat U of A, your arch rival at home, and now you go on the road to Colorado. And if you stub your toe, this is one of those deals where you've got a split at Colorado and Utah. I'm not going to be mad. I'm not going to be grumpy here tomorrow if they lose tonight, if they play well. It's the old thing. Play hard, play smart, have fun. Do those three things. Play hard, play smart, have fun. It's really not that hard. And it doesn't matter if it's pro, college, high school, or youth leagues. If you just do those three things, it's going to work out. So for them tonight, it's get after it at Colorado. We'll talk with Kyle Dodd here in a couple of minutes on that as well. A lot of things on my mind today we'll get to momentarily, but we get things off and running. Eric Sorensen with our Facebook question of the day. E.
Brad, I'm getting my bags packed tomorrow on the bird, headed out to the Combine, officially starts today with punters and kickers and long snappers and short snappers, but the meat of it starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
So today's Facebook question is, Steve Keim, Bruce Arians, the crew from the Cardinals are out there. The Cardinals are picking 20th in the first round. You're making the pick. The area you're addressing with the 20th pick is fill in the blank.
Offensive line or safety. See, there's a lot of needs, and maybe Kent goes a different direction on this. We'll have him on in a couple of minutes. There's a lot of needs, I think, on this team. Do you have to look at building a roster to compete with the four games you have with the two teams that are better than you? Seattle and San Francisco. Oh, well, we beat Seattle. Yeah, but you didn't make the playoffs. So let's not sit here and split hairs. You have to get better. Are there needs at other places? Do they have a need at tight end? I think they have a need at tight end. Do they have a need at running back? Andre Ellington's pretty good last year, but is Andre Ellington an every down back?
Yeah, they want a pass-catching tight end. Send a message to Todd Graham and say, hey, can you get Jason Morrow's tape from the Holiday Bowl over at Texas Tech and send us that our way? He only had like 37 catches in that game. I'm sort of I kind of look at it the same way you do. More of an open book for me. This is a really deep draft.
Yeah.
So the Cardinals may have the luxury of finger quotes taking the best player available.
That's
at 20.
That's no fun, though.
Sure it is.
They're not going to take a quarterback at
20. No. But, I mean, you're right. They have need areas.
Yeah.
So pick one of the five need areas and whatever the best player is at number 20, take him.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, so last year they did the deal with Tyrann Mathieu, which they got ripped apart for in some circles. In other circles, it was viewed as a brilliant pick, and it ended up being a brilliant pick. They took the receiver Swope last year that couldn't play with, you know, either arms or either legs. Unfortunately, he had the concussion, so they completely missed on him. If you get about a 60 to 70% hit rate on your draft, you're going to be in good shape. So I have to trust Steve Keim and his staff more than a little bit, because the one draft that they've done, it's like going into the restaurant, the high-end restaurant. The time you're there, you had a great meal.
Yep. Case in point, Andre Ellington. I mean, what a steal. Fifth round, sixth round, something
like that? Sure. But do they need to take a quarterback? They talk about taking a quarterback every year. Okay, so as they sit here right now, do they have to take somebody to develop them? Because Carson Palmer is not going to be the long-term answer here. I don't know. I like your question today. It's over at Facebook.com. Let's get you caught up on some of the things on my mind in the world of sports. Brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Here we are on a Wednesday. The Honda Resort and Casino is just begging for you to come on up. Pull down that slot. Eat some great food. Stay there this weekend. It is, of course, the big weekend where they've got the mountain mud. It's the winter games. They've got all sorts of activities going on around the winter games and the sled dogs and the great food and the fun. That's this weekend at the Honda Resort and Casino. The Honda Resort and Casino, you can go over and do some skiing at Sunrise where they're making snow. Head to the Sunrise Ski Resort, too. That's at the Honda Resort and Casino. Stay there, eat some food, have some fun, big winnings. The Honda Resort and Casino, they've been a part of us since day number one. So the NBA trade deadline is tomorrow. We have the combine that is getting started. And I think I'm going to go through the combine just a little bit. Quite a few of you were worked up over Shannon Sharpe and Dan Marino being blown out by CBS. I know it's television, and that's fun and easy to talk about. We talk about Bob Costas's pink eye again last night. I heard my wife say off in the other room, his eye still looks kind of funny. You're there to watch bobsledding, dear. That's the way it works. Dan Marino and Shannon Sharpe aren't telling me anything that I don't already know by Sunday morning. So they get blown out yesterday and they put Tony Gonzalez in. That's fine. On to the combine, because that's more important to me. So the laundry list for the Cardinals and the combine, you could go through tight end, most certainly. You could go through a running back. I tend to look at running backs as a commodity that gets banged up, beat up, that I would not take. If I'm building an NFL franchise, I'm not taking a running back in the first or second round. There's a lot of conversation. I talked to an agent about this past week about Kadeem Carey and the number of carries that he's already had on his body down in Tucson. You know, these guys don't last as long as they used to. And so, yeah, you may hit on an Adrian Peterson, but eventually the wear and tear and toll, I'm not taking a running back in the first or second round in all likelihood. I believe in building your offensive line. When you have Seattle there stacking up with defensive linemen coming after you off the edge, you better have your offensive line in order. And so the Cardinals, to me, as they go into the combine, look that direction. I think it's a very interesting combine from the standpoint of all the guys in state. You know, you have Will Sutton, who a year ago it was viewed as he's a sure thing first rounder. Now you're not hearing that anymore. You have Carl Bradford, who left early, is being viewed as a freak. Okay, you have Marion Grice coming off of an injury. You have Kadeem Carey for the U of A. There's so many good storylines around the Arizona State and Arizona players. Eric, how are you going to cover all this? Like, let's say you're in a spot where Carl Bradford and Will Sutton come in the room at the same time at the combine.
It's very possible.
You're going to be back there. It's very possible.
Very possible.
And which guy are you going to go after?
In this case, I would probably go after Carl Bradford simply because we've sort of told the Will Sutton story already.
Yeah.
And Bradford, I think, is going to make – I mean, they're both probably going to make wows at the combine. Probably. Sorry, Will.
I don't know about Will.
For all the wrong reasons.
I don't know about Will.
Last time I saw Will Sutton, he was walking into a McDonald's in Eloy. No, not Eloy. Somewhere in some desert city in California.
Yeah, yeah.
And judging from the bowl game, well, he ate too much McDonald's.
He didn't play well.
I would say Carl Bradford just because he's going to pop off the charts because he's a freak athletically.
And the running backs, if Grice and Kadeem Carey walk in at the same time.
It's got to be Kadeem Carey.
See, and I would want to hear how Grice is doing with his foot at this point. You know, I look at Marion Grice and Kadeem Carey, and they're completely different backs, in my opinion. But I think Marion Grice is going to have a shot in the NFL. I really do. So there's some interesting storylines there. Over to the Suns. So I watched the game last night. I very seldom watch NBA regular season games for more than, I don't know, you need to just watch the last 5 minutes. You really do. I watched from the second quarter on last night. I watched rotations, and I watched Gerald Green just go crazy last night. Gerald Green with 36 points, a new career high. What's most impressive about this with Gerald Green is if it's Carmelo Anthony scoring 36, he does it on 25 shots, right? I mean, he just jacks up shots, and his shooting percentage is just dreadful. Gerald Green last night was 11 of 22 from the floor, 50% shooting from the floor. He had 6 three-pointers. You talk about an impressive stat line. Sometimes, guys, it's not all about, hey, I scored 36, look at me. It's you scored 36 on 22 shots. You hit half of those? Here's Jeff Hornacek after the win last night in Denver, the Suns in overtime win by 5.
I think defensively we did a good job. We made him take some tough shots, and then we got the rebounds. You know, there was a couple, I think Fareed got one. I can't remember if that was regulation or overtime, but, you know, I think we did a better job on the boards. Guys really went after it in that overtime, and, you know, we got a steal and got a layup, which helped.
And more on Gerald Green's big game from the coach's point of view.
And we told Gerald if he wasn't fouling so much, he might have had 50. You know, he only played, I think, 8 minutes in that first half. So when Gerald gets on those rolls, he's big for us because he can make those shots. He's not afraid to take shots at the end of games when the game's on the line. And, you know, when it wasn't looking good for us, he made a couple big ones.
So the NBA trade deadline is tomorrow. Last night, Mark Cuban. Now, Mark Cuban can't talk about players in particular, but it came up yesterday. And last night that the Dallas Mavericks and the LA Lakers are now looking at Kevin Love. Mark Cuban reaction to the buzz about Kevin Love to Dallas, quote, the Beach Boys are in a couple of months, end quote. Now, if you know the backstory on Kevin Love and the Beach Boys and the family ties, that's very funny. I think that's very funny and very smart on Mark Cuban's part. So the Lakers and Mavericks are trying to put together offers for Kevin Love. Is Minnesota going to sit tight on Kevin Love? That's the guy I want the Suns to go after. Go take two of these first-round picks and push him out there and go put a player or two. You're going to have to give up some talent in order to get him. But I think that's the guy they have to go after is Kevin Love. We'll get to ASU and U of A basketball in a little bit, but up next, the NFL scouting combine. Kent Summers, AZ Central Sports, Arizona Cardinal insider. He joins me from Sky Harbor Airport. He's about ready to hop on a plane to fly to Indianapolis. We'll break down the Cardinals and much more. That's with Kent Summers. He knows it inside and out. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Let's talk NFL draft for a couple of minutes. The Combine. Eric is heading to the Combine, courtesy of our friends at Santan Ford and General Manager Tim Hovick and company. Eric will be back there starting tomorrow. Kent Summers joins us now. AZ Central Sports, of course, our show, Sports 360 AZ with Brad Sussmat on AZ Central Sports. Always good to catch up with Kent. The Cardinals with the 20th pick today, as you're ready to board your flight to go to Indianapolis, who would they take today or what position would they take today at 20, Kent?
I've gone into this thinking, and I've just started to dabble in the draft. I've gone into it thinking an offensive tackle. But then I'm on a conference call yesterday with Mike Mayock, and he says, you know, this is a very deep draft in offensive linemen and tackles. You can pick up a starting offensive tackle in round two or three. I specifically asked him about the Cardinals, and he said, you know, because of that depth, they're really in a position where they could take the best player available. It's a cliche, and obviously they need help on that offensive line, but they could go maybe a pass rusher there. I could see a defensive end, somebody to groom as a backup replacement. Darnell Dockett, a situational player. They could go outside linebacker. Certainly, even tight end, but I still think an offensive tackle that at this stage, 4 months out, is probably what they're going to do.
Because as we sit here and look at the line right now, you know, Jonathan Cooper last year, of course, was on the sidelines hurt, but Sal and Winston, Massey, are those just guys at this point? And do you expect Winston to be back here? So I think you've got to factor all that in when you're looking at the tackles.
Yeah, no question. It's not just Bradley Sowell at left tackle, as you mentioned, who I thought he came in and he's a real tough kid and tries hard and all those great things, but they need to try an upgrade. And, you know, Eric Winston is a guy, he's a free agent. I think they would like him back, but like a lot of, you know, unrestricted guys on this team and throughout the league, it's got to be at the right price. And I think they're going to, you know, maybe let Eric see what he can do on the market and see what goes on there, but certainly they need some depth at that tackle spot. You know, this staff apparently wasn't thrilled with Bobby Massey last year. He barely played. Guys played over him. So I think it's time to address the line. And you know, and Bruce Arians and Steve Keim have said that much, that, you know, they need to bolster really both sides of the line of scrimmage to compete in the NFC West.
What can we take from last year's draft of what this tandem did and apply it to this year's draft when we're looking at players, because they had great success in last year's draft?
They really did, and it could have been even better if not for the injuries. You know,
sure.
to the finishing up of Matthew wasn't able to finish the season, and Jonathan Cooper, and they obviously made a mistake with Ryan Swope, the receiver from Texas A&M, et cetera. But I think they feel comfortable enough with what they have in the locker room, maturity wise, that they're not afraid to take a chance on a guy here or there. We saw that with Tyrann Mathieu. They feel like, they have an organization in place and veterans in place that will help a guy if he has great ability. But I think Steve Keim has learned too, and under Rod Graves, I think he's learned too, where you get in trouble with the draft is if you go into it thinking, this is what I need. I've got to get this guy at number 20, or I've got to fill this position at number 20. I mean, it's a short-sighted view in this league, and you just don't pass up somebody you feel can be a great player. And yesterday, and Mike Mayock's not the only one saying this is one of the best drafts in the last decade, but yesterday he was saying there's going to be a team picking in that. There are guys who are going to be picked in the 20s who would have been a top 10 pick a year ago.
That's really good. AZ Central Sports, Arizona Cardinal insider Kent Summers just about ready to board a plane to go to Indianapolis. He'll be at the Combine. We'll be doing the show from there as well with Eric back there starting on tomorrow. Do you draft, here's a question I get from fans, do you draft based on within the division to beat San Francisco and Seattle where you look at how they match up? Yeah, you beat Seattle late in the year, but do you put anything into the division and how you're building this roster?
I think so in terms, I don't think it's as important as it was before the restructured division when there were five teams in each division and half your schedule was against division games. I mean, now it's six games, but, certainly when you look at the way Seattle is built and the number of pass rushers they have and how they come at waves, and then you look at your own roster, and it's weak in that spot, outside edge blockers, as far as guys under contract and experience and ability. I think, obviously you've got to address that. And it's not only a concern because of the division you play in, but just that's the way the league's gone. It's a passing league now. And if you have to constantly give your left tackle help, it reduces your options. And Bruce Arians did that last year. I thought he did a nice job adjusting and realizing what he had and changing the offense, but I don't think he would like to do that again. I think even though it would mean maybe a rookie left tackle and a left guard and Jonathan Cooper, who is not a rookie but hasn't played in a game, I think they'd be willing to do that if it's a talented guy. I think they're confident in the coaching staff they have that they could develop guys and get them up to speed quickly.
Okay, so let's go through this from a draft standpoint. I'm going to switch over to free agency with you. Do you have to address the safeties in this draft?
I don't know that you have to. Certainly it depends on what happens in free agency. I don't know if you can count on a Tony Jefferson taking that next step and becoming a starting safety next to Tyrann Mathieu. You still have Rashad Johnson who could step in there. I think it's a good idea to take a safety in this draft. Maybe later, though, I don't think it's a pressing need. And I think there'll be veterans, just okay veterans that you can plug in and get by with, available in free agency. That kind of like what they did last year with Jeremiah Bell.
Tight end. So Rob Housler, year after year, I've heard this is going to be the year where it finally comes through for him, and it hasn't happened as of yet. Do you have to address tight end here? And again, is that a free agency thing? Are all these just predicated on what they do in free agency? The two are tied together, Kent.
Yeah, I think they have to do it in both places. I mean, they Housler's the only one they have under contract. Jim Dre is an unrestricted free agent. Ballard he's restricted, so they can bring him back. Jeff King gone, Corey Sperry not under contract. So certainly they need to re-sign those guys. I think they would like to re-sign Jim Dre because he's a versatile guy, not only as a tight end, but he can line up as an H-back and block in that way. But, there's a few interesting names in free agency. Maybe a Brandon Pettigrew from the Lions makes some sense, a guy who can block and catch to a certain extent. And There are some really good tight ends from what I'm reading and hearing in the first round of this draft. But you know, do you do that sitting there at number 20 when you probably have bigger needs elsewhere?
What's your gut tell you about Rashard Mendenhall and handing the reins over to Andre Ellington, or if they let Mendenhall go, do they go get a running back?
I think they do get a running back. I think that's something that they'll always take late in the draft, at least, and in free agency. I mean, they do have questions. He's not under contract. Brian Williams is a huge question mark, never played this year. I don't know if they bring Mendenhall back. And I don't, you know, Bruce Arians likes him an awful lot, but that knee trouble that he had and other various injuries have to give them a lot of concern. Whether he's going to be ready to go each week. That said, maybe they figure, hey, with Ellington, Stephon Taylor, and if we bring Mendenhall back and then we plug another guy or two, or re-sign an Alphonso Smith or somebody of that ilk, we're okay at that position. Maybe we can fill other needs. That might be their mindset.
Over on the free agent front, so there's a lot of business that is going to be done back there, not just free agents, but with players, agents laying the groundwork. But let's get right into Carlos Dansby. Where does that stand in your opinion?
Well, they're talking, but it's a tricky situation, as everybody knows, because of his age, 32. He turns 33 during the season. Carlos is a guy who thinks he deserves to be paid among the highest paid linebackers in the league. And you know, and his play last year certainly gives that belief merit. You know, the Cardinals' view is, you know, how much money and years do you commit to a 32, 33-year-old linebacker? I think, you know, Carlos is a guy who's always wanted to test the market. He's not a guy, I don't believe in hometown discounts anyway. I think that's just a cliche we all throw around that,
right.
You know, players want to get paid. But that said, I think Carlos realizes this system is really good for him. Playing next to Darrell Washington is really good for him. So I think it's a process that's going to play out over time. I think, you know, the Cardinals' view is, look, the guy was on the market last year. And he had 130 tackles in 2012 for Miami, and he was still on the market in the summer. So, you know, there are not a lot of teams, maybe no team, who's going to give him the money that he's looking for or expects, and it's just going to take a while for maybe Carlos to come to that realization. But it's a dangerous game for the Cardinals because, you know, there really wasn't a defensive player who was any better for them than Carlos Dansby. And I think, you know, he makes Darrell Washington better. I think he makes everybody on that team. And not only physically, but, you know, mentally. He's a guy that is really smart on the football field. And Todd Bowles, the coordinator, relies on him an awful lot. It's just really key that they bring him back. But they've got cap concerns, and they don't want to blow it up 1 year for a 32-year-old middle linebacker.
No, and during the season, early in the year, when Carson Palmer was struggling, the easy topic to do on a talk show was, should the Cardinals draft a quarterback? I don't see that being the case. And the financial aspect of it, and you may disagree with me, but the financial aspect of it for Carson, you don't want dead money sitting around either. So he's going to be here. They don't go after a quarterback. They don't even sniff a quarterback, do they, at this combine?
I think they'll do their, as they say, their due diligence.
Right,
because even
right.
if you're not going to draft one this year, you want to know everything about a guy if he comes on the market 3 years from now, 4 years from now. I could see it if they fall in love with somebody that they think they could pick up in third or fourth round. You know, for instance, we read a lot during the Super Bowl and even before how John Snyder of the Seahawks fell in love with Russell Wilson. Not in love enough with him to take him in the first couple rounds, but to wait anxiously and pick him in the third round. I don't think that will happen with the Cardinals, but it's conceivable, certainly. And Bruce Arians loves quarterbacks. And Steve Keim, when he took this job in 2013 in his opening press conference, said, I'm a believer that you acquire a quarterback every year. You take somebody mm-hmm. in that position every year. And they, you know, they didn't do it last year. So they've got to be convinced that who they draft is better than Ryan Lindley. And, you know, Bruce Arians seems to like Ryan Lindley.
Before I let you go, and we're talking with Kent Summers, AZ Central Sports, covers the Cardinals. He's heading to the Combine. You can read all of his content online over at AZ Central. We appreciate his time with us. Of course, the show on AZ Central as well. This morning, Steve Spurrier said that Jadeveon Clowney's work ethic is just okay. Now, it's caused a huge firestorm today. Would a team draft a guy whose work ethic is just okay? You've covered combines through the years. How much lying, how much motivation, how much stuff are we going to read and hear about over the next 5 days? It's simply noise and not fact, in your view.
Well, I think that we'll hear a lot of stuff that's noise, and you'll have to filter a lot of it out. Like last year, where somebody reported the Cardinals are in love with Matt Barkley and he's never going to get past them at number seven. Well, that wasn't true, and we obviously know what happened. So there's a lot of stuff that's going to be floating around out there, and you have to kind of take things with a grain of salt, and it's hard to know what to put credence in. But certainly, you know, I didn't follow Jadeveon Clowney any closer than you know, most people did, but certainly his work ethic has to be a concern. It's a legitimate concern. That was a question at South Carolina, and it's a question now. Is he going to take plays off? And when, you know, he's going to be your first overall pick, if you're the Houston Texans, it's imperative you get the right answer for that, because the guys in the locker room who are in that position have to be your hardest working guys on the team. But that said, the guy's got unbelievable talent and just a freak athletically, and he'd be awful hard for the Texans to pass up at number one.
Last question. So on the local guys in state, are you going to be all over those storylines? As well, I know you're going a lot of different directions. And if so, is Will Sutton at the top of your list? Is it Kadeem Carey, the ASU U of A guys that are going to be back there?
Yeah, I really want to get to those guys. Kadeem Carey, Will Sutton, Carl Bradford. I think Marion Grice is a real interesting case coming off that leg injury. You know, there's some guys from Phoenix at other schools. You know, you think of Devon Kennard from Desert Vista and
Trent
USC.
Trent Murphy
yeah.
Over Brophy.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of good local stories. You try to get to them as much as you can. Sometimes, you know, people come in that interview room and you've got to make a decision between three or four guys, as Eric and you guys know. But it's kind of fun that way. You get to see a lot of guys, and there's always a lot of local stories.
Stay well. Safe travels. Thanks for the visit.
Thanks, Brad.
It's Kent Summers, AZ Central Sports, Cardinals insider, heading to the Combine today. You can read all of his content over on AZ Central Sports, or just watch him here with us every day. Appreciate his time. And on the other side, we'll head up to Colorado tonight. Arizona State basketball, a big game for them because they are following the U of A win. You don't want to stub your toe at Colorado. National television tonight for the Sun Devils. Kyle Dodd, Sun Devil analyst, joins us next. I'm Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com, on AZ Central Sports, and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat and White Mountain Radio.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center, available 24/7, 365 at Sports360AZ.com.
Lots going on. Good Wednesday to you, Brad Sussmat. Thanks again to Ken Summers, AZ Central Sports, at the Combine. Eric is heading to the Combine in Indianapolis. That will be tomorrow, and he'll be there thanks to our good friends at Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it's all about you, our coverage from the NFL Scouting Combine. And, so the angles at the Combine, there's all these ASU and U of A guys are going to be there. Marion Grice and Carl Bradford and Will Sutton, and then for U of A, Kadeem Carey. Looking very much forward to that. Wonder on the basketball end. So this summer, Jahi Carson, they'll be the scouting combine around ASU. Jermaine Marshall, I'm hearing Jordan Baczynski is a second-round pick potentially because he's a big man and he can actually shoot free throws. And then you have Aaron Gordon down in Tucson, so it could be a very busy scouting combine in basketball in a few months. Tonight, U of A trying to recover after their loss to ASU. They're at Utah. Utah is really good at home. And just wonder if the Cats can figure it out on the offensive end, where they've struggled mightily. And then we have Arizona State tonight at 9 o'clock Arizona time at Colorado. They're going to take a nap during the first half of the game. Kyle Dodd, ASU color analyst, joins us for a couple of minutes from Boulder. These late games, first of all, the crowd is all tanked, right? I mean, they're just hammered before tip-off, and they're yelling stuff, right? That's how it works?
Yeah, I think these late tips work. And the advantage definitely of the students, because they're probably just getting ready, getting in the shower, getting ready to go out anyway. So I think it'll be a it's always a great atmosphere up here in Boulder, but it should be a really good one tonight.
Okay, let me figure this one out, Kyle. So you guys have played every day of the week in this new Pac-12 schedule, right? Pretty much?
Every day but Monday, yep.
Every day but Monday. So there's no rhyme and there's no reason. Does it impact a team when there's no consistency because we hear about athletes being a creature of habit?
I think maybe a little bit, but probably not as much as people make it out to seem. I think for more, you know, it's more the coaches probably and just different ways to prepare and different, you know, amounts of times to prepare scouting-wise. And, I mean, I played in the Pac-10 when it was Thursday, Saturday, every week, and it was pretty easy to understand your schedule. And it is a little bit different when you have these, you know, change-ups and, you know, Wednesday, Sunday is always interesting and makes travel hard for me and Tim, too, which, you know, we don't appreciate. So, no, it's all good.
No, would you hang out with Jake Plummer last night? Because you're in Boulder?
We did.
Yeah.
We did. That's the best part about the Boulder trip was the last couple of years we've had a chance to have some dinner and grab a couple beers with Jake the Snake, and there's no better Sun Devil than Jake, obviously, and so it's always good to catch up, and he'll be at the game tonight rocking his ASU gear right behind the bench just like he was last year. Actually, the students were on him pretty hard last year for wearing the ASU gear, but so he said he's going to try to be a little bit more disguised this year. So
he still picks up the tab, right?
I think we all.
Oh, it's one of those deals. I see.
I'm sure he tried. So
yeah, ASU color analyst Kyle Dodd with us for a couple of minutes. Did you are you a fan of fans rushing the court?
I mean, I'm torn because I think, you know, obviously the situation. You know, if you're U of A and you've lost twice this year, but you've had four court rushes on you in two games, so it's always interesting. But I think it's part of college basketball, and I mean, just being a part of a game where we had won and the fans rushed the court, there's no better experience as a student athlete. It's just amazing to share that moment with your team, but also the student body. I just think that I think there's probably a part for it. I just think the students got to be smart enough to look up and see, I am not going on this court until it says 0.00. And I think that's where the issue is. And, you know, I mean, we've all been there at that age and stuff, so you can't really fault them. And it was, you know, an amazing experience for them.
They didn't crush you. I mean, they didn't, like, step over you and Tim and your gear trying to get to the court.
No, I did. I have a good video, though. We were still on the air, and somehow I managed to get my cell phone out and just watch the melee unfold in front of us, and it was pretty good. I have a couple good shots of it. So
okay, so let's talk X and O's here. What's going on since the game in Tucson? And I understand the game in Tucson, Jermaine Marshall didn't play, but facts are there is chemistry now that you have a big, you have a point guard, you have a shooting guard, you have energy coming off the bench. What is going on here since the U of A game where this team has been on the role that they've been on?
I think it's exactly what you said a minute ago. I think it's chemistry. I think for a while there, they had a tough December in the sense that it was a really weird schedule. They played three games in 3 weeks. They played on a Saturday, week off, and you throw Christmas in the middle there. And just the first three or four games of the Pac-12, I thought they were out of sync and out of rhythm, especially on the offensive end. And, you know, Jermaine was hurt, obviously. And I think just they were a completely different basketball team in Tucson. And, you know, as U of A was with, you know, with the injuries and stuff. So I think the big thing for me, you know, people forget Eric Jacobson wasn't in the starting lineup down there.
Right.
So, you know, that's been a shift. And then the other thing is Jordan Baczynski barely played in that game. He had 2 fouls in the first 30 seconds. So I thought, you know, Arizona really played against a completely different Arizona State team with adding Jermaine Marshall and Jordan back in the mix. And it was just one of those grinded out type wins. And I think, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about it. Is it the biggest win in Herb's tenure and that kind of stuff? I'm like, I think it's the biggest win in anybody's tenure at ASU, if we're all honest. I mean, it was just a huge, huge win for the program.
Talking to Kyle Dodd, ASU color analyst, for a couple of minutes. But I had some ASU fans that got after me. I pointed out a nice win in mid-February. I'm not taking away from it. But big wins come in March, and you have to build on it. I'm not expecting sweeps. I mean, you got to go to Colorado and Utah. If you split on the road from here on out, my point is I'd like to get to a point where fans rush the court when they beat ASU on the road. And that's a tall order. I know that, Kyle. And that sounds kind of like get off my lawn. I'm an old man here. But let's not get too high about mid-February stuff if you're Arizona State, because you could turn right around and all of a sudden face a four-game losing streak in a hurry in this conference.
Absolutely. And this is, you have a perfect example of that, because, these are two tough road games this week. These two teams combined are 31-2 at home this year. Mm. Colorado is always notoriously a good place to play, really tough place to play. And Utah is just so much better this year and can beat anybody anywhere. And I think it's just going to be, you're only as good as your last game, really, in the Pac-12. And obviously it was a great win last week, but time to turn the page. And, you're shooting for a split this week like you always do on the road. And they've been able to do that the last couple of road trips. They've been able to get that first game, which has been really good because you're kind of playing with house money at that point. And they haven't been able to get the sweep or anything. But I think this is a huge game tonight for them.
Okay, so where are you at on Jahi and his season and how he's playing?
I think Jahi's been about, what I thought. I thought that people would make some adjustments to him and how they guard him, after his freshman year. And I think people have done that, and people have done a better job guarding him at times and putting more attention on him. And I think he's worked through that. And I don't buy the, he's struggling or he's draft stock is plummeting argument, because, we all know that has really nothing to do with this right now, this part of it, because there's times when Jahi's been, the best point guard in the country. And so I think he's just trying to work through the different dynamics of how people are preparing for him and figure out a little bit more about his game. But, at this time last year, nobody knew who Carrick Felix was. And, Carrick goes third pick in the second round. So there's just so much basketball and so many different things that go on from here until, the end of the season. So I think I think Jahi's been about what I thought. He had a really, really good year so far.
It's interesting you bring up Carrick Felix. Last year, we did the show from the Pac-12 tournament. We'll be up there again this year. And I remember a couple of NBA scouts that I've known for a while come walking through, and they were asking, what we thought of Carrick Felix and dealing with him. They were poking and prodding. And one of them said, yeah, he's going to get drafted. And this was before the Pac-12 tournament.
Yeah.
In Jahi's case, so the dunk the other night, anybody pull him aside and say, just dribble the clock out? Or is it, from your view, guys, you're making too big of a deal out of this. This is the heat of the moment. Or does he need to understand the situation and not hang on the rim? If the shoe is on the other foot, are ASU fans livid that the guy hung on the rim?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, it's one of those things, almost like the court storming. I see both sides of it. As a analyst of college basketball and someone that's, a little bit older than when I played, I probably would have said run out the clock and throw the ball in the air and let's celebrate. But, when I was his age against U of A, getting the steal, going down to have a chance to hammer one and put one home and kind of stick it to your rival, I think that was a great opportunity. I think the mistake he did make was obviously pulling himself, doing a chin-up on the rim, and that was something where, you got to learn from that. And I think it's really been a big issue to me on the other side, and really over nothing. I'm almost to the point now where I hear people complain about it. I'm like, okay, go back and call a tee and see. I guarantee you still lose the game, because if you're relying on a tee to win the game, then you were in trouble in the first place. And people don't realize they still had to make two free throws. They were 16 for 30 from the line that game. Mm-hmm. And you still have to throw a length of the court with 0.5 seconds. So, I still like ASU's chances regardless. And obviously it was a play that you didn't want to see happen, but time to move on. So,
and you flip it around, what I've got from ASU fans is how many technicals should have been called on U of A's bench for Sean Miller being out of the coaching box.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, you could go back and just really dissect the game. I thought that there was a couple of really bad bailout calls on Nick Johnson when he was out of control. And I thought ASU got the benefit of a couple calls, early in the game. And, that's going to be the course of the game. I think just it was magnified because it was the end of the game. And in a rivalry game like that, it was, you're going to have very extreme people on both sides of it. And overall, I think Coach Miller obviously handled it with so much class.
Yes, he did.
And just kind of moved on and just said, hey, it was a great slug it out type ball game, and I thought that he was the best example of how we probably should have handled it.
Safe travels. What do you have, 12 hours to kill in Boulder now? I mean, I just took 15 minutes off your time. I mean, you know, what are you going to go skiing, or you got a whole day? You might as well take a, you know, go drive somewhere, climb a mountain or something.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm trying to figure out what I should do, if I should hike. What, 9 o'clock tips are on the road. The team, at least they got to, you know, they get to go shoot around and watch film, and me and Tim are just sitting here trying to pass time. So
yeah, stay well. Appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Brad.
You got it. Kyle Dodd there with us for a couple of minutes. Arizona State Sun Devil color analyst tonight, 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock on ESPNU tonight. But you can always turn down the volume and. They have a couple of people I've never heard of that are doing the game tonight on ESPNU, so you can have Tim Healy and Kyle Dodd do it. On the other side, so I saw some comments from NBC's people on how they're disappointed with the ratings of the Olympic Games, and you just want to tell these people, you know what, it's not about you. One of them said, well, I'll share with you about the lack of gold medals and all this nonsense. That's on the other side. And Kevin Love says Minnesota's a better place than the Lakers. That just came in, too. That's all next. I'm Brad Sussmat.
React and interact to our Facebook question of the day. Like our page at facebook.com/sports360AZ.
So Kevin Love just sounded off a little bit on the Lakers and how being in Minnesota, it's a better team than the Lakers. How about this? Kevin Love to GQ, people think it's so far-fetched that I would stay in Minnesota, and I'm not blanking on the Lakers, but we, the Timberwolves, have the better team, the better foundation. I'm having fun. Are you joking? Are you kidding? Eric, do you think being in Minnesota for a kid from Southern California, how much negotiating is going on? We had Mark Cuban last night saying the Beach Boys are coming in concert. When people are trying to get him to talk about Kevin Love to the Mavericks.
He's just playing the field. That's all he's doing.
Being in Minnesota, we all want to be in Minnesota.
You saw the weather today in Minnesota. It's beautiful there in the winter.
I love ice fishing. I'm never going to win a title. I'm never going to win a thing if I stay here in Minnesota.
Or just ice in general.
So the Suns have to get Kevin Love. Come on. If he's going to sit here and make asinine comments like that, I want him on my team. Have some fun with this. The Lakers and Mavericks attempting to complete a trade this week. The trade deadline is tomorrow. The issue is Love can become an unrestricted free agent after next year. So whoever's going to get him, you're going to have that, are you going to resign here? Or are you only going to have him for about 14 to 16 months? You know, so if I'm the Suns, I take that gamble because I'm an hour away from L.A. and I can pay you a boatload of money. And I'm already ready to win, and I think I've got a better general manager than the one that's with the Lakers. I think I have a better coach than the one that's with the Lakers. I think Mike's going to get fired in L.A.
And the Suns are a playoff team.
I
mean, you never know. They get Kevin Love. That really changes the complexion of things,
everything.
Doesn't it?
And this nonsense of, well, Brad, they have 4 first-round picks. I've been hearing this for 20 years since I've been in the Valley. There's always, well, we might lose this, or, oh, my gosh, we could lose that. When Jeff Hornacek was traded, I wasn't here, but a guy named Charles showed up and changed the face, and people never forgave the Suns. Some people have never forgiven them for blowing Jeff out of here. I think they'd be happy having Kevin Love, even if you had to give up. You're going to have to give up more than 2 first-round picks.
Of course, but getting an NBA elite player, you do what you can, especially
Absolutely.
In the prime of his career like Kevin Love is.
This segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford, where it is all about you. So Santan Ford General Manager Tim Hovick says to me, wherever you want to go, wherever Sports 360 goes, we want to be there to support you. Eric is getting on a plane tomorrow to go to the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. For the last 2 years, Santan Ford has said, wherever you want to go, we're there to support you. So we appreciate their support. That's why we go to places like the Final Four, March Madness, the NCAA basketball tournament in Vegas, around the Pac-12. We travel with ASU. We go to the Scouting Combine. So the next time you're looking for a vehicle, let me ask you something. Do you want to be buying a vehicle from somebody that's invested in the sporting community? All right? A lot of you, I think, do. You like sports. You like the fact they're saying, okay, we want to give back. Santan Ford, I was just in there over the weekend. They had their big President's Day weekend sale, selling cars right and left. I drive the Ford Fusion, the 2014 Fusion. It makes a lot of sense for me in my busy lifestyle, doing business, being around town, whether it's at games, being on TV, being on the radio, doing my thing with the business, the Ford Fusion makes a lot of sense for me. Now, how about you? Are you driving a vehicle you're that comfortable with? Stop on into Santan Ford just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. One other thing on my mind today, and there's a lot going on. Eric's heading to the Combine tomorrow. We'll have plenty of content from the Combine coming out. But here's some stuff that came from the Olympics and some ratings. Eric, if I were to tell you last week the top show on cable was Walking Dead on AMC, you'd probably believe that.
Walking Dead,
very popular.
I would.
What followed Walking Dead in terms of ratings was TNT's NBA All-Star Game, number two. And then the All-Star Saturday Night was number three. My thought is slow week on cable. Tough to watch that stuff on Saturday night. Tough to watch. The top show last week on ESPN was the Celebrity Game on Friday night.
Yeah.
That's a real tough watch.
Slow season.
How do you watch that?
Slow season.
So then we get over to the Olympics. So the head of the NBC Olympics, their executive producer, says today, quote, on the overall performance of the network, would it be nice to have another gold medal here or there? Sure, but that's always the case in any Olympics. The ratings are off 11%. We think that ratings can be turned any way you want. The bottom line is, are they compelling? Are they entertaining? Are they informative? Any such order. Bob Costas's pink eye has been entertaining. There's no question it's been entertaining. Bob, I'm over here. I'm looking at this camera. It's okay. We like Bob Costas. He's come on the show through the years. It's fine. When they put Matt Lauer in for Bob Costas, Matt Lauer looked like he would just come off a ski slope out of a cave trying to find the abominable snowman in Russia. He had this big old beard going, like, what is this? And then Meredith Vieira comes in, and I'm expecting a cooking segment. I'm not expecting anything that's hard-hitting. Then we have this girl, Kristen Cooper, who does the Bodie Miller interview. So, Bodie, when you look in the sky, are you thinking of your brother? This interview that she made Bodie Miller cry. And she's gotten absolutely crushed, even though Bodie's come to her defense. Very little has there been anything about the games themselves. We have not had Lindsey Vonn. I'm pretty certain they had to keep the sharp objects away from anybody that bought the Olympic Games after Shaun White and Lindsey Vonn were out. Like, who's going to watch this stuff when we don't have these names? This guy, Charlie White, that's been skating? It's Eric Burns on skates. That's all that I see, the former Diamondbacks outfielder. I see this fluffy hair going everywhere. That's it. So we have ice dancers that have made our Olympics complete, and we have the head of NBC saying, well, it sure'd be nice if they won a few more gold medals here. Shut up. I mean, come on. Are you hearing yourself? Hey, guys, our ratings are stinking because the bobsled team didn't get it done. You know, the USA is playing right now, and I'm watching the USA doing their thing on the ice. The hockey for the men and the women, for me, have been the most compelling aspect of these Olympic Games. And I just wonder, in all seriousness, are people getting tired of the meet so-and-so who was born with, and no, this is not meant to anybody's in any disrespectful sort of way, but you can only take so many stories of this person was born and was left at the doorstep and didn't have a dad or a mom and was raised by a grizzly bear. You can only have so many of these stories where they're trying to make you cry 30 seconds in. After a while with these Olympic Games, it's about the athletes. It's not about the backstory. Well, if it's ice skaters that have been going together skating since they were little kids, yeah, that's a pretty cool story with the Eric Burns lookalike Charlie guy. Okay, that's fine. But not everybody's going to be like that. And the summer games, to me, are far more interesting. We haven't even had snow in Russia. Like, I'm reading on Twitter feeds of a lot of people that Eric and I have on the shows through the years, respected journalists that are over there saying, no snow today, no snow today. I'm here to cover bobsleds. We have no snow today. It's like you guys are all working for the Weather Channel. Sports360AZ.com. We are with you every day doing our thing for a couple of hours. Also on AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio across the great state of Arizona. And I'm on Twitter. If you don't like stuff, it's fine. I'm on Twitter. You know where to find me, @BradSussMatt. And if you like stuff, a lot of you do, it's fine too. The Combine. Eric, again, I can't give you enough heads up that Eric's heading to the Combine tomorrow to Indianapolis. We've got all these ASU and U of A players, the Cardinals, plenty of content on our website, sports360az.com. I'm Brad Sussmat.